Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
And a very good evening from Damien O'Mara. You are most welcome to the Thursday edition of Game On. Between now and 7 o'clock, we'll have updates from day one of the US Open in golf. We're going to have further reflections on what has been kind of an epic couple of days for Irish athletics in Rome. We've heard from the athletes, we've heard from the broadcasters. Tonight, we're going to hear from arguably the real stars of the show, the Irish fans who played such a key role in providing that landscape for the Irish athletes to perform against the backdrop of former Munster star James Collin on his new departure as the sporting director in Biarritz, a new chapter for him in his career. We'll have Rebecca Cray on Women's National League football and Aoife Murray on Camogie. All of that plus Shep with the latest stories from the States to come between now and 7. You can text the programme. Our number is 51552 or you can find us on X at GameOn2FM.
Game on 2FM.
It's great to have your company. We would love to hear from you over the course of the next hour if you want to get involved in the conversation at all. 51552 for your text. We are going to begin, as mentioned, a massive week in golf, one of the great events in the calendar every time the majors roll around. We're going to go to Pinehurst, day one of the US Open, and I think we're just a couple of minutes away at this stage from the big Irish names heading out on course. Let's get the latest on play so far from Gary Moran.
Yeah, well, just about 11 minutes or so till Rory McIlroy will go off in that marquee three ball with Scottie Scheffler on that incredible run of form that he's having, and also the PGA Championship winner, Patrick Cantlay. But let's talk about, for now, what happened this morning, and it's Patrick Cantlay, he of the multiple Ryder Cups but no majors, who has suddenly opened up a two-shot lead. He was tied with Matthew Pavon just a couple of minutes ago, just as your program was coming on air. But Cantlay has birdied his final hole, the ninth in his case, to go to 5 under, and Pavon has bogeyed to drop to 3 under. So Pavon now in a share of second place, but two behind Cantlay, with Tony Finau, who's playing the last, along with his playing partner Ludvig Åberg. So they're both finishing on the ninth as well. Of course, we're starting on both tees here, so some finishing on 18, some finishing on 9. So Cantlay on 5, Finau, Åberg and Matthew Pavon, they are all on 3 under par. Only one player is on 2 under, Russell Henley, and the large group on 1 under includes Sergio Garcia, who lost out in a 7 players for 6 spots qualifier but subsequently got in as an alternate, the Canadian Corey Connors, and European Ryder Cup assistant and number cruncher Eduardo Molinari. Now, among those tipped for high finishes in the build-up, both Colin Morikawa and Brooks Koepka finished level, which is fine, tied 14th, but Koepka was 3 under before 3 bogeys in 4 holes late in his round. And now for the two Irish who've played, well, Seamus Power, he had 3 birdies in a row from the third, his 12th, to get back from 3 over to level. He holed putts from 5, 19 and 11 feet. He rued 3-putting his final hole, which will just leave a little bit of a sour taste as he finished 1 over. For context, though, of the 78 players this morning, he'd definitely be in the top half, while Tom McKibben in the first group to tee off the 10th had an early birdie, but only that one, and 3 bogeys and a double means that he finished on 4 over. And just some of the others then: Tiger Woods, 3 over for the day, almost finished his round. Phil Mickelson, dead last on 9 over. McIlroy, as I said, tees off in that 3 ball that will have so many people following on this vast expanse of Pinehurst number 2. They had 60,000 spectators in 2014. They've taken it down a small number, but there'll be a huge amount of people following that 3 ball for sure. And then Shane Lowry goes off at 13 minutes to 7.
Thank you very much, Gary. We'll check in with Gary again before the end of the programme. And a reminder, as always, you can follow all of these events on the RT News app and also the RT Sport website. Now, we are going to reflect further on what has been a bumper weekend for Irish athletics at the European Championships at the Stadio Olimpico in Rome. The team landing back in Dublin today. And I was going to say they get a great reception, but David Gillick, who's been on duty for us across the weekend, was posting videos as the team got on the plane in Rome, and they got a great reception boarding the flight. So God knows what's going to lie in store when they arrive back to Dublin. Obviously, Ireland, a fantastic week for them in terms of their success on the medal table. Those 2 gold medals, 2 silver medals, and Ireland 10th all in. So we will be reflecting on that after a quick break. Stay with us.
Game on on 2FM.
So it's Athletics next on the programme, as mentioned. Further reflections on what's been that great weekend for the Irish team in Rome. And undoubtedly, the athletes are the stars of the show, and they were so giving in their time over the weekend. And so, you know, the interviews with David Gillick give you an insight of the character and the credibility of the individuals we send, aside from the sporting prowess that they have as well. And our colleague Greg Allen trending all over the place with his commentaries as well. And also very prominent amongst the entire thing was the presence of a very sizable and very vocal Irish crowd, and one that wasn't lost on the athletes that were competing themselves.
When I started there going into the blocks, I really felt like I was doing it for a whole country, and I wasn't nervous. I was really excited because I'm seeing these guys next to me. And the support we have in the stadium, it's an unbelievable day. Like, we can't get over it.
Me and Tom were only saying earlier, we felt so good in the warm-up that we were even like, what's going on? But honestly, it's everything to me. It's probably everything to the team. And the whole stadium was just amazing. The Irish fans turn up every time. And yeah, it's just super.
You've had a busy couple of days already, but when you came out there, you got some roar as an introduction.
No, yeah, the Irish fans absolutely... insane. I love having them at all the championships. Like, they're so supportive.
You ran over there to all the Irish fans. You just threw yourself into them. That is some feeling.
Look, I tweeted after the guys had their relay victory that nothing comes close to the Irish support. You look around the stadium and there's always tricolours, and everywhere they're flying, it gives me such a lift, and it gives all of us Irish athletes such a lift. To know that these people are spending their hard-earned cash to come and watch us and to cheer us on. There's people that I'm seeing down there that have been at every championship I've raced, and knowing how much it means to them that I'm winning a gold, it fills my heart with joy.
That's Ciara McGeehan rounding off that montage. There's actually a great clip across RT social media platforms earlier of Charlene Maudsley's mother, Louise. Kee McCormack from Morning Ireland watched last night's race in her company, and it certainly would warm the heart to watch it. So we are going to chat to, a man who's described on my running order as Irish athletics super fan, Seamus Carey. Seamus, good evening to you.
Good evening, Damien, and firstly, thanks for having me on. And secondly, apologies for the hoarseness in the voice. I sound like a politician the morning after a party group think in here, but I will persevere, and I can guarantee it's purely from just screaming in the stadium over the past 6 nights. It's just been an absolutely magical week.
Well, I would argue you've probably exerted more energy than some of the athletes themselves, because every time we saw the great cutaways on the television of the Irish fans, it was pretty raucous, and the relationship between the fans and the athletes, certainly they gave you something to cheer, but there is that genuine sense that support gave them maybe an extra little percentage along the way as well.
Absolutely right. So I think the aim of us all as fans in the stadium is really to create a bit of a scene. So as I said, we can always manage to find good seats with a little bit of Irish charm and a little bit of a lack of self-respect. We'll find ourselves in the best seats. We'll create a bit of a song and dance. We'll make sure that the athletes know that we're supporting them. And hopefully, and as we've heard from those in the clips, hopefully that sound and that level of support really does drive them on. But it's passion, it's emotion. It's such a great event, and for anyone who's never been to an athletics event before, I'd really encourage you to go, because it's full of energy, it's full of excitement, it's full of enthusiasm, and it's a really family-friendly event. So we had people in our group. I think the youngest was 4 years of age, a lovely girl called Molly, and the oldest was probably into their 70s and 80s. I'm not going to name any names, but it's a wonderful experience, and unlike some other sports, which can be a bit... intense, I guess, in a stadium, athletics is just lovely celebrations.
Can I ask you then about your role? David Gillick was on with us on Monday, and he paid you personally great credit for your role. Like, are you the chief instigator in all this, or are you, you're like the Pied Piper, where you go, you manage to bring the crowd with you?
Absolutely. So, look, it's great to get that recognition and that call out, but we're really doing it for the athletes, and so I think my athletics background, really, my dad was a master's athlete. I was involved in setting up the Templemore Athletic Club and the track down there. And then we moved to Athlone in 87, and there was no athletics club. So dad just trained my sister and myself, my sister to a couple of All-Ireland medals. and me to a very proud fourth place certificate in the Westmeath Community Games, which is the pinnacle of my sporting career so far. But athletics has always been in the family. We've always watched it on TV. And then I set up my own consulting firm about 10 years ago. I had a bit more of control of my calendar. I've started going to some events. And since then, I've been just absolutely obsessed. Obsession really is the right word. And it's just been great that we've met different fans over these years. They've joined our group. It's gotten bigger and bigger. And so we started with probably four or six people at the first event. We now had, at this Champs in Rome, almost 100 in our group. And it's just great to be able to grow that base and to be able to share that experience with everyone, because that's really what sport is. It's about a shared experience. And I think it was summed up one time at a European Indoors where I met Mark English's parents after he'd won a medal. And I said, look, I'm really sorry to intrude. I just want to say congratulations. And they said, no, this is what it's all about. It's about sharing these moments. It's about sharing these moments with other Irish people and really celebrating it. And so we're just glad that we're able to get bigger and bigger groups coming and really begin to support those athletes and make sure that they know how loved and how supported they are, because they are the stars and we're just there to cheer them on.
And the beauty of this as well is that it's a very dedicated athletics community in Ireland, and it's a very small community at its heart, and you're not that many steps away from the athletes themselves, because people give back to the sport and volunteer through the clubs and offer their time to coach. That I would imagine within your group you've got plenty of people who have connections to those that are competing on the track.
Absolutely, and that's what's lovely for just a fan like me, is you're sitting in a stadium, but you're sitting beside athletes' parents, you're seeing the joy and sometimes the heartache in their faces, you're sharing that with them, you're having officials, you're having volunteers from Athletics Ireland, you're having coaching staff sitting with you, and then we do get to see the athletes and you do get to chat to them, and that's one of the wonderful things about athletics, is it's so accessible. So in Rome, we all had access to the warm-up track, a beautiful warm-up track, which everyone talks about, just beside the main stadium. You could go down and watch all the athletes warm up. You're spotting Olympic champions and European champions warming up, and you get to share in that and experience that. But it's just special moments where, like, I'm just so happy for all of the team that they all performed, but particularly for someone like Phil Healy and her coach Shane McCormack. She's been the queen of resilience over the last 10 years. I've had so many setbacks and so many injuries, but always comes back, always performs, and just to be able to finally get a European senior medal. And she came over right after the race and gave me a hug and just said, look, this is fantastic. You and the fans have been part of every step of this journey, and I'm just so happy that we're all able to share in this. So it's just great that athletes like that are getting rewarded.
I was lucky enough to be in Munich 2 years ago, and I remember as we kind of checked out of the hotel the following morning and walked away having won four medals, we talked about this brilliant European Championships that we'd had, and like, they have built on it. And like, could you have imagined heading to Rome last week what you would have experienced over the course of the couple of days that you were there?
I think one of the things that's always difficult is I grew up in the years of watching Sonia Sullivan, and so Sonia was imperious, was able to beat everybody on every single day, and so there's always this expectation that the world's going to get medals, things are great, and that was my kind of childhood watching athletics. I then went through my early 20s and early 30s and going, oh, medals are not as easy to come by as they were in my childhood. I thought this happened all the time. And so coming into the champs, I knew there were some possibilities, there were some hopes, and they all delivered. And I think the tone was set on that first evening with the fantastic gold of the mixed relay team. And just, I can't remember a champs where the atmosphere amongst fans and amongst the team has just been so positive, so full of excitement and enthusiasm, and that's just wonderful to see in an Olympic year. And I think the team is very young. I think we can only go on to bigger and better things from here, but that requires athletes coming through, it requires support, it requires funding. I'm always on to as many corporate sponsors as I can to say, look, athletics is a great thing to get involved in, let's throw some money behind these athletes and let's develop even further. But there's a great pipeline, and I think the sport's only going to grow from here.
Yeah, and when we look at the, you know, the gatherings that you've been able to organise and that you're a part of bringing all the fans together at the events, and it's easy enough in a 70,000-seater stadium when it's not sold out and you can basically corral a corner of the stadium to make it into the Irish corner of sorts. It begs the question, what have you and this growing collective got planned now for Paris? Because presumably you will descend there with you know, measured expectations but great hope of further Irish success.
Absolutely. And that's one of the problems with success is everyone gets a little bit of expectation. And I think we all need to be very careful about expectations going into the Olympics. Olympic medals are very, very hard to win. And the team has done amazingly at this Euro Champs. But let's be realistic about what those possibilities are coming into Paris. I've been lucky enough over the last couple of years for these champs to be able to arrange large groups to come to them, whether it's Europeans, outdoors or indoors, or worlds outdoors or indoors. Olympics is a different kettle of fish altogether, and it's very hard to get those kind of areas where you can make your presence felt. So there will be a lot of Irish fans. We will be dotted around the stadium. You'll see flags here and there, but as a large presence in one area, I think it's going to be very difficult in Paris.
So effectively, you're on the way home from what is Athletics Italia 90.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It was lovely to see that Olé Olé chant start after the mixed relay in the same stadium where it started back in Italia 90. So that was a nice full circle moment.
Yeah. If people want to join the bandwagon, and bandwagon's the wrong phrase to use, but you'll understand the sentiment. If people want to join the growing army of momentum, and like, what is very genuine support for a fantastic generation of athletes, is social media the best way to kind of track you down and to, you know, hopefully join in the party in Paris in a couple of weeks' time?
Absolutely. So we're just in the process of setting up the official Irish Athletics Supporters Club. And so there is a website where you can register to be informed when it launches. It's to get updates on how the athletes are doing, get access to the tickets, as I talked about, for Worlds and Europeans. And that website address is iasclub.ie, so Irish Athletics Supporters Club.ie. And then one last thing, just to give a plug, is that the National Champs, which are sponsored by 123.ie, they are on the 29th and 30th of June in the Morton Stadium in Santry. And so if you as a parent have seen your young people glued to the TV screen watching these athletes over the last 6 nights, here's a chance to get to Dublin, watch them live in person. It'll be the last chance to see them before the Paris Olympics. We're really hoping it's going to be a great nationals full of spectators. So if you have the chance to pop into that, that'd be great. And you can get tickets on athleticsireland.ie.
Fair play to you. Listen, hopefully all going well, Seamus. I'll see you with my microphone in my hand in Paris in a couple of weeks' time, and we'll get a few bits and pieces done, hopefully, around what will be a fantastic Olympics.
Hopefully, unlike Dermot O'Rourke, I hope you won't call me out on national television for bawling my eyes out at the end of the mixed relay.
Isn't that what sport is about?
I'm wearing it as a badge of honour.
There you go. Yeah. You're going to become a meme on social media. Seamus, wish you well. Thanks so much. Enjoy the recovery from the championships.
Thanks,
and thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Brilliant. Seamus Carey there. And again, quite genuinely, the support that the athletes got and speaking to them both in mixed zones and speaking to them in private over the years, it is so greatly appreciated and does make such a big difference to them. We've got much more still to come on the programme. We're going to be chatting to the newly installed sporting director at Beer, James Collin, after the break.
Game on.
Rugby.
Yeah, we'll be making way for Ben in about 35 minutes. It's Rugby Next on the programme, and it's been a busy day for the RFU, who revealed their strategic plan for 2024 to 2028, their strategy document at the Aviva Stadium today. The one thing that stands out is in the mindset of the RFU Chief Executive Kevin Potts, women's rugby is the major priority to come over the course of the next couple of years. It will include the appointment of a women's strategy implementation lead, which will report directly to the Chief Executive himself. And a lot of facts and figures, as one would imagine. 90,209 registered players, which discounts people that are social members of clubs or non-playing members of clubs. So 90,000 registered players across the island, and the IRFU's theme over the next couple of years, Inspire, Connect and Thrive, as it enters its 150th anniversary. We have the URC semi-finals to come over the weekend, and we've got teams across Europe it might be in kind of close season, but they're preparing for the challenges that will lie ahead when the seasons resume in a couple of weeks' time. And on that note, delighted to say we're joined by the new sporting director of Biarritz, old friend of the show, James Collin. James, how are you?
I'm very well. I'm busy, as you said, but I know it's been really good.
Now, not to defy secrets, but you and I had a conversation on the phone, I think sometime last summer, maybe certainly in advance of the World Cup, and you were stepping off the treadmill for a while. So I think this is like the Sopranos, you know, they just when you think you're out, they pull you back in. What was it about this job that, like, this is a very significant role to take on? What was it about it that enticed you back into the world of pro rugby?
It's the challenge. It's Biarritz Olympic is one of the biggest names in French rugby. It's one of the biggest names in European rugby, and to be given the honour of trying to put the train back on the tracks in relation to the club, it's just something that I couldn't have imagined when I moved to France 10 years ago. It's 10 years now that I'm in France. 10 years ago, if you had said to me that, look, in 10 years' time, you'll be the director of sportif for Biarritz Olympic, I'd have laughed at you and said you were mad. But look, it's been a wild ride, and I'm just absolutely over the moon and very honoured to be given the opportunity, especially as a foreigner. It's not always evident that these kind of positions are given to a foreigner, and it's just, it's as I said, it's with great pride and with a huge amount of humility that I take on the challenge as best I can.
Well, and when we look at it, Biarritz, as you've touched upon, one of the great names of French rugby, and you know, people, like, we remember Heineken Cup finals in days gone by, and Munster and Biarritz having great battles. Yes. The Biarritz of June of 2024, it's a much different setting from that in the Pro D2, the second tier, and only just missed. Only just avoided a relegation playoff, which could have seen them drop.
thankfully
for you.
It's
a club that is, you probably won't shy away from the fact that it's a club that's star has kind of fallen slightly in recent years and has had challenges in recent years.
Like every club, it's had its ups and downs. The stories of the clubs are, especially in France, they're not always the easiest. We don't have the parachute of the federation taking care of the clubs. Sometimes they can fall into hands of people who probably shouldn't be in positions of authority, but that's the way it is. Sometimes money talks. But the president is Sean Hegarty, who's got a connection with Cork. His dad is a Kiwi, but his grandparents come from Oi. There's a connection with Ireland direct with Sean, who is always been kept that Irishness in there. So maybe that fell in my favour. But I think, it's the challenge is day-to-day professional rugby isn't an easy thing to the gestion of that company, because that's what it is. It's a company is important, and how we run the company and how we run the business of professional sport has to come from this top. And that shows by the example that I'll be setting by our new director general, is Arnaud Dubois, the solicitor. Look, there's so too much grey in professional sport in general. So we're just trying to put it back into the black and white and make things as simple and honest as we can. And put back the one thing I said to the guys when I took over, is that we have to be the best at the things that don't take any talent. And if we're good at those things, that means that people are being honest, people are giving it for the jersey, and putting back pride into Biarritz Olympic, and that's what we want to do. That's the mission from day one.
So is it about consolidation? Like, you're not talking about rallying cries to get straight back into the top 14. It's about regrowing this club on a very stable footing.
Exactly. The first thing is to have a real economic stability in the club, and that's what Sean and Arno have been working on. Me, from a strictly sporting side of things, is putting things back in order in relation to player contracts and the level of money that we can pay to players. For obvious reasons, when you finish 14th in the league, out of it 16th. You can't make the same offers as if you made out of if you finished second. So we have to be realistic in what we want to do. We want to construct from the foundations up, which maybe is what got lost sometimes. The beginning of the end can be when you get promoted too quickly. So we've laid out a plan of 3 years, 5 years, and 8 years, and once that's done we'll be in a position at the end of that 5-8 year period to be in a position to be competitive in the top 14.
Is this always where you saw yourself going? Like, you know, you obviously were, you know, an elite player. You obviously took to coaching straight from retirement. You know, I think you've said yourself, you kind of stumbled into coaching much quicker after playing than you would have expected. But this is a very, very different role from being on the pitch, you know, day in, day out.
Yeah. This isn't about cones and setting up training sessions. This is about a plan of action over from under sixes all the way up into the professional team. So, I mean, the project is an amazing, it's a daunting project, but it's an amazing opportunity to be able to put a mark on something over a long period of time. I think if you ask anybody will talk about, any professional coach will talk about projects, because that's the important thing. The people you're going to work with and the project that you can project. The people that I'm working with are honest, and they have the best intentions of the club. is their sole focus. So when you have those kind of people around you, it's easy then to throw yourself in at the deep end and work as hard as you can to make sure that the club comes out. And it's the club is the most important thing. I don't want people talking about me. I want to be in the background, and they're talking about the team, and they're talking about the progress the team is making, and they're not talking about the structures that we're putting in behind the place. But they will be the results of the professional team will be based on how the club is structured behind the things, and how the club is structured will be based on our fundamentals of the foundation, our academy system, our underage system, and all the way up through the club. So that's the plan.
And the Basque people are a passionate people. What's the connection like between the supporter base and the club? Is it still strong?
We need to get that back. It was a bit lost, to be honest with you. It was lost in the sense of that identity. Basque was lost. My thing, there's a Basque poem about defending the house of your father, and I think it's prevalent to professional sport, because professional sport is a passage. You come into the club, you're in the club, and then you leave the club, but the one thing that stays there the whole time is the club. And we need to tie into that identity, reform those alliances with the Basque people, and that they can support their team. So, you know, not to give away any secrets, but like the jersey this year is going to be the Basque flag, the old jerseys that we used to play against when we were playing with Munster against Biarritz. It was always that Basque flag. You'd see the red, white and green, and what it represents for the people in this Basque area. There's three provinces, Basque provinces in France. There's four in Spain, and their thing is 4 + 3 = 1. So, like, we have that identity in common with Irish people, and Basque people have that same kind of identity, and, you know, that kind of chip on both shoulders. So we're well balanced. So it's fantastic to be able to be part of that, you know.
Are you getting any time at all to keep following the URC, or is it your head in a laptop recruiting for next year already?
I'm honestly, I've watched a bit of Munster, and that's about the size of it.
I've never met a Munster man not to tip Munster.
We obviously the game against the Ospreys. Munster have been the farm team in the URC this year. I hope that continues for obvious reasons. Leinster will be obviously looking to do something after their, not going to another final and not getting there again this year. Hopefully it's between the two of them. Either way, the Irish rugby will be happy with the end results.
Listen, I've great admiration for how you've embraced life in France and how you've gone off on this journey. You know, that you listen. Yeah. It would have been easy to land back into Dolphin with a bag of balls and cones and try and make a career for yourself there, James. I wish you nothing but good with success to you and the family. And thanks so much for being with us on the program.
I really appreciate the call, lads. Thanks, man.
That's James Collin, the director of sport with Biarritz, and we'll keep an eye out on their results over the course of the next season. Certainly not one for getting carried away. We've a break to take. We've got Soccer Camogie and Shep to come. Game on.
on 2FM.
And you're welcome back. Full schedule of games in the men's Premier Division in the League of Ireland this evening. Bows at home to Derry. Dundalk have Sligo Rovers. Galway against Drogheda. Pats against Shamrock Rovers. There's always a Dublin derby in there, isn't there? And the league leaders Shelburne are away to Waterford. The women's Premier Division games take place on Saturday as per usual. And delighted to say Rebecca Cray is with us to look ahead to those games and more. Rebecca, how are you?
I'm good, Damien. How are you?
Not too bad. Good to talk to you as always. I'm looking at the league table. And Shelburne, exactly where you want them to be, right on top of the table, but hot on your heels. Galway United in advance of the sides meeting this weekend, which is undoubtedly the standout game of the weekend. And, you know, could be one that could have an impact on the destination of the league title. Could be one of those junctions in the season.
Yeah, most definitely, Damien. You know, it's a short enough season. We only played each other twice, so it's pretty definitive, I think. You know, we're on 21 points ourselves with Galway on 19. We've played 9, they've played 8. So it's kind of a game that you're looking at, you know, for both teams to want to win. So, it's a case that Galway have been going really well. I think I've always said over the course of the years that they've been a team that are there or thereabouts, you know, quite physical, really determined, dogged, you know, nipping at your heels. And, you know, I've brought the element of football, good football, in this season. So, look, they've obviously held their own throughout the season. And look, I'm sure they'd be looking to do that again. But you know, Shells, as always, are there. And we'll be looking to make a statement this weekend.
I'm looking at the table. And, like, from a Shelburne perspective, yet to lose a game this year. You've won 6, you've drawn 3. But have only conceded 2 goals in 9 games. So, like, this title quest, it's really built on that defensive effort, which has been phenomenal this year.
Completely. Look, we've got, you know, we've been blessed with great defences over the course of time, you know, with Pearl Slattery leading the line there at the minute. You know, we've Jess Gargan is back with us now, and Kiva Keenan, who's a wealth of experience. But, you know, Amanda McQuillan in goal has been amazing, you know, in terms of clean sheets. And look, it's a credit to them, and obviously the gang in front of that. You know, they lead from the forward line right the way back. And yeah, it's a case that I think when you're going into these games or going into league campaigns, it's, you know, goals are great and you know, strikers are fantastic, but I think defences are what win you these championships. Yeah. And these league titles. So look, it's stood to them so far, but we'll see how we go.
We look at the table, the form team of late, really, Athlone, I think it's like 6 wins and a draw in 7 games, and like a team that are there on everyone else's shoulders, and the ongoing development work that's been done there, it's really standing the testament of this season.
Exactly, yeah. I think Athlone are another team, obviously, you know, over the course of the last 2-3 years that have been rising every year. They're on 19, along with Galway, you know, so they're right there, and they will be there for the foreseeable. You know, Kieran Kilduff has done great work with them down there after Tommy Hewitt has left, and he's kind of rejuvenated them, I think, this year to go on. They've shown their cup success in the FAI Cup, and I think they're trying to, you know, make their stamp on the league. So, look, it's not ever, you know, over the years it's been a 2-horse race or 3-horse race, but this league, I think this year has been the most wide open we've seen. So yeah, this weekend is definitely going to be one to watch.
Just before we let you go, you know, we've talked a lot about the ongoing growth of the game and how important it is for people to harness that. And we've an 11-team league at the minute, and the news during the week that Waterford are to be invited to supply a submission of interest for next season. It's great to see the established clubs around the country embrace the women's Premier Division and the women's side of the game. And equally, geographically, it's great to see another part of the country hopefully serviced with, you know, top-level women's football next season.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think back when I was playing, you know, back in the underage setups, and coming into senior football, Benfica were always a team that were up there when we used to go down and play them, you know, and in all Ireland competitions. Great setup out in Waterford, you know, a few teams coming through, and Bowes and Tramore, Dungarvan, and they just recently won the Gaynor Trophy down there last week. So they have a good kind of underage setup coming through the ranks, obviously with club licence, and now, you know, clubs will need to have that women's section developing over the next year or two. So it's great, you know, in a geographical sense. And obviously it brings us back to even teams then within the league, you know. So you've got certain teams that are sitting idle some weeks. So that won't be the case next year, which is brilliant. And obviously then it kind of expands the southern setup in the league, yeah.
Yeah, listen, we'll see how it all plays out. Rebecca, good to talk to you as always. Thanks for being with us.
Cheers, Damien.
Rebecca Cray with us there. We're going to keep on the line of female sport, and we're going to reflect on what was a busy weekend in the Camogie Championship, and the All-Ireland Series is really starting to power on, and before we know it, we're going to be in Croke Park for the All-Ireland Camogie Finals, one of the certainly most atmospheric days of the year. And let's get a sense of where the standings are at in Group 1 and Group 2. I've been chatting to Aoife Murray.
Game on.
Camogie.
We're at the midway point now, three games in the group stages played. And really, we are at that stage now where we can well and truly say these groups are starting to take shape, and we're going to get a really good understanding of what the landscape will be like for the knockout stages.
Yeah, I think you're kind of, you're seeing where maybe number one, and then where the fight is for not to be number six, Damien, really. I think if you're looking at group one there, you know, with Limerick and Antrim really down holding that bottom of the table, three losses from three games. So it is a bit of a depression state with regards to the bottom end of the table. But then I think you got to look at the positives from it, looking at the likes of Waterford and Derry, in particular Derry. I think Damien, they're the ones that you have to say probably had the happiest of championships so far.
It's been a remarkable transition for them. And you get promoted and your number one goal for most teams is just to consolidate your position. And I think they've probably gone about it much quicker than a lot of people might have expected them to have done. So that it's that great cushion now that I won't say you can enjoy the final couple of matches of the group, but at least what pressure was there is gone for the last couple of matches of the group.
I think in fairness for Derry, they probably had a huge pressure for that first round, playing their neighbours, playing their rivals of Antrim, and coming out with the win. And I think that really set them up to have probably a steady championship, a well-tested championship, and a probably more importantly, staying up championship, as you said, Damien.
Because it is all about momentum, and no doubt two wins and one defeat from their opening three games, 6 points in third place, a 2-point cushion to Waterford. Like, listen, I have no doubt there's already conversations taking place around, sure, why can't we push on and advance to an All-Ireland quarterfinal?
It's absolutely within their grasp. I do think they have two hard games to come at the end of the championship, and I think that'll be telling a lot of just how much maybe energy they've had to exert in those first three games. I think, look, beating Antrim, beating Limerick, okay, having a fair defeat to Tipperary, but you've just lost to a team that has been pushing and pushing and pushing for the last few years and just won the National League, Damien. So I think, if anything, they probably would have learned maybe just how much of a gap potentially is there. Maybe even tactics-wise, how they play-wise against these top of the table teams. I think if they can take that from the confidence of beating teams that either are at their level or a little bit more experienced than them at this level, then I think, look, you would have to say, why not? But equally, so much progress. So I think there's a lot to be proud of how they've done.
You're not surprised with what you've seen of Tipperary?
No, I'm not. And I think it's safe to say that, like, for the last few years on here, Damien, I've been quite positive, which says a lot for a Cork woman to be positive about Tipperary. But I've liked how they've gone about their business last year, and absolutely in the National League, right? It goes without saying with the performance that they put in. And the performance they put in that league was they learned a way to win, which in fact, Tipperary, over the last number of years, grit, determination, fight, all those lovely key things that you need to have. Ignore the talent, right? You've got to have those ingredients. But what they did in the National League final was they found a way to win, because Galway were chipping away at them. Mallon coming in, scoring those 3 points, the crowd getting behind them. They found a way to win. And I think that has really transgressed into the championship and how they've gone about their business, because they've done it nice and quietly as well.
It's funny, the mirror images where, like, Tipperary hurling is in such a bad place and Limerick hurling is on such a high. When we look at the flip in Camogie, it's completely the mirror image. And before we have a look at Group 2 and where it stands, you look at Limerick and Antrim, rock bottom, three defeats from three games, pretty much there or thereabouts in terms of scoring difference, minus 45 for Limerick, minus 48 for Antrim. And the meeting of those two sides is the one that looms large with regard to where you're future is in terms of the senior grade.
Yeah, and look, you know, we all watched the Munster hurling last weekend, and seeing Limerick break all those records, and then you see their female counterparts, Damien, just kind of nearly at rock bottom. Not to be too exaggerated about it, but you know, for me, being a Munster woman, for me, Limerick were always difficult. Like, they always had huge talent. You know, growing up, some of the hardest games in Munster were Limerick, but unfortunately, there seems to be either a lack of interest, b, a lack of investment. And a lack of investment isn't just financial either, Damien. I know we always think investment as cash and checks. I know the Limerick hurlers are well placed on that side of it, but the Camogie is also about people investment. You know, are they getting the resources enough that one, it promotes it at underage level, right? Because there's times, isn't there, Damien, where you might have to just think about holding our senior status so that, you know, our development squads are under 14, 15, 16, and so on, that this might have to be a 10-year project. Mm-hmm. But for me, you know, having Limerick towards the latter end of the table, and let's face it, it's coming down to going to be a shootout, isn't it, really, between Antrim and Limerick for that bottom spot.
When we talk about the growth of the game, and if we draw the parallel, say, with Dublin football, and when Dublin football made the breakthrough, there was an entire generation of young girls who got interested in the game. And that is now seeing the benefit in the senior women's grade and the underage levels coming through, that you would think it is a missed opportunity for Limerick with what growth and interest there is in hurling in the county over the course of the last 6 or 7 years, if that's not to be harnessed. And like, listen, like you've touched upon there, if it falls off, it's hard to climb Everest again.
It is. And I think a lot of counties sometimes have trouble keeping the consistency, Damien, like the consistency of interest, the consistency of support and consistency of success. And success doesn't always have to be medals for certain counties either. You know, it's about participation. It's about keeping players from underage all the way up to senior age still actively engaged. For Limerick, it could be staying up senior again this year and actually contesting, contesting the Munster Championship next year, right? But it is, there's such an interest in Limerick hurling. You would have to question, why isn't that translating to just hurling, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's a boy or a girl, they're still holding a hurling. No, it could be a 32, it could be a 35, but it's a hurling.
Yeah.
It should not matter whether it's a boy or a girl. If the hurling is good in the county, it should just translate to anybody who has the possibility or the opportunity of holding a hurling.
Yeah. We look at Group 2, Cork on top, 9 points, also 3 wins from 3 games, as with Tip in Group 1, Galway and Dublin hot on their heels. You're after giving Tip the big sell now. So is this typical Cork thing now of we'll talk down our own and waiting there in the long grass? Like that group is shaping up exactly as you would have expected it to. And Clare in fourth place is probably too big and ask at this stage to see them dislodge, you know, Galway or Dublin above them to rob them of a place in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what I can say now about Cork to try and play them down. But how they've gone about the championship, I can't, right? So sorry to all the girls down there, but I have to big them up. I look, they've gone extremely, a bit like Tipperary as well, Damien, nice and quietly through championship, right? Won the Munster, got a good push against Waterford in the Munster final. But what they've done is they seem to have used a huge amount of players in those 3 games. So in fairness, if you're Jordan Manley, the hardest thing now is you've got 2 more games. The last one, I think, being Galway, which will be the big, big last game, which is shaping up to be, again, a shootout for the top of the table. But for me with Cork is they've now used a lot of players. Sometimes the hardest thing is, will they have a solid 15 by the time they come to the end of this championship? Will they know if they go straight through the semi-final, who are their best starting 15 and who are the best finishing 15? And sometimes by using a lot of players, it can be hard to get that consistency. I know myself, it used to, as a goalkeeper, as a teammate, you were delighted to see so many people get game time. But as a goalkeeper, it used to annoy the hell out of me because you never knew who your full back was, or you never knew who your centre back was, and so on. So I think that will be a little bit of a challenge for Cork, but Jesus, it's a great challenge to have. But equally, you look at the opposite end and you're looking at Down, Waterford fifth, or Wexford, apologies, fifth, who've had an up and down championship. And I'm quite happy, Damien, to say that I got it completely wrong last week when I thought Wexford will have the measure of Dublin in Parnell Park. But by God, I was 100% wrong on that one, where Dublin came out and absolutely destroyed Wexford. And they did it by playing a really fast game, by exposing Wexford at the back, drawing Wexford defenders out, playing 2 inside, and literally just going for the juggler. Every opportunity they had, they went for goal, which I thought was extremely impressive.
I'm looking at it here. You would have played in a couple of Tip Cork All-Ireland finals, wouldn't you?
I would have, yeah.
I'm looking here at the schedule between now and the 11th of August, and if the form line continues and these teams keep to develop as they are, it is going to be the hottest of rivalries in Croke Park on the 11th of August.
You know what, Damien? I haven't really missed playing since I retired, but I think I would never have so much FOMO in my life, I think, Damien, if that was the All-Ireland that came around. Because, yeah, as you're right, look, when I started out, it was a bit of a Cork versus Tip shootout, both with regard to the league final, to the Munster final, and to the All-Ireland final. And to say there was no love lost between both teams is putting it mildly. But but they were always great games. You know, it totally was a bit of a seesaw over those probably first 5 or 6 years. But the one thing I will say about Cork and Tipperary, it doesn't matter if Cork are going bad, they will up their game against Tipperary. If Tipperary aren't going well, they will absolutely up their game when they play Cork. We always used to say, you know, Tipperary could have been having a poor championship, and next thing we come along, and you know, there'll be hurleys broken. It'd be an absolute dogfight. And we'd always say, geez, they always fecking up their game for us. I think if that was a final, there'd be so much buzz around it. And I actually think all that excitement would actually transfer to the field, and we'd have an absolute cracker if that did, if that is how it finished.
Game on.
Camogie. I see Aoife Murray chatting earlier, and let's be honest, if anyone knows anything about what it takes to win an All-Ireland, it's Aoife and that Cork team she was a part of. Let's check in. Actually, before we go back to Pinehurst for day one of the US Open, let's check in on plenty of other stories to catch up on in terms of US sport. Let's have our regular Thursday catch up with Shep.
Game on.
Eye on America.
Well, there goes that series. There goes that series. There's no other way to look at it, ladies and gentlemen. There's no way to look at it. Nobody's overcoming an 0-3 deficit in the NBA Finals. It hasn't happened. There's no reason to believe that it's going to happen now.
Good evening, Damien. Let's start with the NBA Finals, where last night in Dallas, the Boston Celtics held off a furious Mavericks rally and a 106-99 green and white victory. The 7-point win gives Boston a commanding 3-0 lead in the best of seven series. In last night's game, the Seas came dangerously close to blowing a 21-point lead, which would have been the largest collapse in the NBA Finals since 1997. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown led Boston with 31 and 30 points. The Celtics had a 21-point lead with 11 minutes to go. But that's when Dallas got hot. Down 91-70, the Mavs went on a 22-2 run and pulled within a single point with 3.5 minutes to play. But the problem for Dallas, Luka Doncic fouled out with about 4 minutes to go. Tatum, Brown, and Derek White scored the final 13 points for Boston, leading to the 7-point win and the 3-0 series lead. With one more victory, Boston will hoist its 18th NBA championship banner. Game 4, set for Friday night in Big D. And now, for our recurring segment, This Week in Caitlin Clark News. The roster for the 2024 U.S. Olympic women's basketball team was released on Tuesday, and Clark's name wasn't on it. This, of course, triggered all of the takes.
The idea that somehow NBC was going to put women's or men's basketball during prime time in the Olympics because Caitlin Clark's on a team or anybody else is on a men's team is a bunch of nonsense. They're going to give you women's gymnastics, they're going to give you swimming, and they're going to give you track and field. They're going to do that every night, 7 to midnight. For 17, because that's what the family watches at home, and that's where the ratings come in. Their games and the men's games are on USA Cable. Now, I'm not trying to knock USA Cable, but you go try to find USA Cable at 1 o'clock in the afternoon during the week.
Sports talkers took USA Basketball to task for missing an opportunity to grow the game. Selection Committee Chair Jen Rosati said they only thought about fielding the best team possible. Clark, who does not have any international experience, took the high road, and she said she hopes to one day be able to represent the country in the Olympics. So until next time, with my Eye on America, I'm Jeff Shepherd. Damien, back to you.
Game on.
Eye on America.
Thank you very much, Shep. The Caitlin Clark story is mental, and it's particularly interesting to hear that American perspective when you say these are going to be the big sports and the basketball is going to be buried, because if you're lucky enough to get to the Olympics, any of the days that the US basketball team, be it male or female, are playing, getting tickets are as difficult as getting tickets to Taylor Swift at the Aviva Stadium. Anyway, no such problems for the gathering at Pinehurst. The US Open day one is ongoing. Let's check in and get the latest, the early stages of the rounds for Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry. Back to Gary Moran.
Yeah, I'll come to those two in just a moment. They're very, very early in their rounds. Larry's still on his opening hole, but with the morning wave drawing to a close and those afternoon starters just really early in their rounds. Patrick Cantlay isn't going to be knocked off top spot anytime soon, and possibly for the rest of the day. The 32-year-old has 4 top 10s but no wins in the majors, and having been level after 8 today, he made 5 birdies in his final 10 holes to lead by 1 from a player in his first US Open, Ludvig Åberg from Sweden, and by 2 from Matthew Pavon and 3 from Tony Finau. Sergio Garcia is among the few to have finished on 1 under, and of the Irish, the two this morning was Seamus Parry, 3 birdies in a row from the third, his 12th, to get from 3 over back to 11. level. He'll put some 5-19 and 11 feet, beat three putter at his final hole. So he finished one over. And Tom McKibben in his first major and in the first group to tee off the 10th had an early birdie, but only that one, and three bogeys and a double meant that he finished four over. Tiger Woods was unhappy with his approach play, conservative and not accurate enough. He finished four over. Phil Mickelson dead last on nine over. McIlroy has started with a couple of pars, and Larry, as I say, just completing his first hole.
Thank you very much to Gary Moran, and plenty of updates from Gary across Morning Ireland, Saturday and Sunday Sport in the coming days. And of course, on Game On here again tomorrow evening. It's just about time for us to make way. Bette De Silva is on the way shortly. Jenny Green is here after 9 o'clock, and then Dan Hegarty is here after 11. A reminder, you can keep up to date on all of the ongoing sports news on the RT News website, and also on the RT Sport, or the RT News app, as I should say. And massive day in football tomorrow. Euro Championships get underway, the European Finals, the UEFA Euro 2024. And if you want to get the inside track on that, it was previewed in full on the programme on Tuesday. Marie with Ruby, with Mark Langdon, Keith Tracy and Alan Cawley. And if you want to get their inside track or their expertise or such on what to expect from Euro 2024, you can do so on the Game On podcast. A word of thanks, as always, to our broadcast coordinator this evening, Laura Lee Davies. The programme was produced by Ronan Lawler, from Damien O'Mara and all of us here. Until we chat again, good night. Thanks for your time.